right, here we go.
I'm gonna make it rain, baby. Make it rain.
As I slowly unbutton your blouse. Why are women's buttons backwards?
I'd take him home with me.
There's a big difference between saying, like, intimate sound effects were very well done. Like, between being like, yo, you suck dick good.
It's fucking art. I will fight people.
Welcome to the Backroom Podcast.
And we are live on the Backroom Podcast. We are very glad you've joined us again for this exciting discussion on our Writers Workshop Part 2. Please welcome in the beautiful, lovely, brilliant, and award-winning Totally Not Natalie.
Hi, I'm Natalie. Totally not my name. Glad to hear you guys back.
And we have with us today Megan the Subby.
Hi, glad to be here.
And all the way from the distant place of down under the Kiwi, Broken Galaxy. Welcome in.
Hello.
We're glad you joined us, dear. And we also have Fresh Dash Bell. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
So, as I mentioned, this is part of our writer's workshop. And today we're talking mostly about writing for men. And of course, I'm not going to talk much about that because I don't do that. So, Natalie. You are up, my dear.
Yeah, you might have noticed I do that. So this is my show, I guess, a little bit tonight. We'll see how that goes. But Priest actually got the intro right this time, which, fun behind-the-scenes fact, he always messes up the intro and cuts it out. And I'm making him keep that in this time so that the world knows it.
Love you, dear. All nothing but love.
Oh, so you say. So the question I think we should, of course, start with, because this is the question we start with most of our guests, is what got you interested in GWA, specifically writing? And what keeps you interested? What keeps you writing? So, Megan, let's start with you, since your name is at the top of the list.
All right, cool. Well, I first discovered GWA probably about 5 years ago now. And I actually discovered it through, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this, but like basically through a group therapy session.
You talked about GWA in therapy. Let me just
hang on. We'll get there.
What?
All right. So, story time.
Well, she learned about it in therapy, so somebody else talked about it in therapy.
Wow, that's beautiful. So
what sort
it.
Of therapy was this? Because it's right. A certain type of therapy.
So I, for about, 10 years, I have been in and out of therapy programs around body image and self-esteem. And I'm doing quite well now, don't worry. But about 5 years ago, I was in a group therapy session with a group of women who were all kind of struggling with body image issues. And the conversation veered onto the topic of porn, as conversations are wont to do. And we all started complaining about being basically unable to watch any visual porn because we would start comparing ourselves to the women on screen. And one girl kind of like raised her hand, and she was very quiet. She was very timid, but she raised her hand and she said, "So there's a thing on Reddit that is audio porn, and I think you guys might really like it." So we all kind of like went home that day and, as supplemental therapy homework, listened to audios on GWA and came back the next day and we were like, oh, we can do this. This is porn that doesn't challenge us in the body image sphere. It's completely removed from that. So I listened on and off for about 5 years. And then around, was it June of this year? I started to go completely insane in quarantine. I was crawling up the walls. I was looking everywhere for some kind of project. And at some point, my brain just said, why don't we try to write a script and see what happens? So I did. And actually, right after I posted my first script, Nat commented, and I had previously listened to Phil's of Nat's work, and Nat said my script was really good, and I was like, oh, if Nat thinks this is good, I have to keep doing this. So
it's true.
That's why
totally
I stuck around.
I appreciate I guess the upvotes there. I mean, I tried to encourage new writers, which is part of the point of this as well. Because I think we need more male content, which you might talk a little bit about. Men get less stuff than women do, which is a shame.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting because the 5 years I spent lurking on GWA, I lurked entirely on the M for F side. And it wasn't until I started writing that I realized that the F for M side is a completely different world than the M for F side. And I guess I never really realized how much more content, especially when it comes to scripts, there were for the women than the men, because I had only been listening to men.
Yeah, it's something I never really... Yeah, go ahead. You have more perspective on this than I do.
Well, it's to her point, right? If you're only listening to one type, at whichever one it is, you often don't realize how the different experience it is to be on GWA from the other side. I mean, obviously, I came on mostly creating content, and I've talked about that. But until I started working with, even some of the folks on this call, creating or helping with other content, right? Basically for men or whatever, I realized, or talking to other women creators, like the experience is very different that I had versus what they had. It's just, it is really interesting how different it is.
And we might explore that hopefully in a couple minutes here, but I want to get everyone's stories up first. So, oh, Galaxy, what did you join? Louise?
I didn't know that GWA was a thing. I started with Pillow Talk because when I first discovered Pillow Talk, I was having, like, I wasn't sleeping well. I needed something to make me sleep, because my mind is awake 24/7. So I was, I started with like the YouTube ASMR things, but then I found that when you play it on the phone, when you turn off your background, it doesn't, like, the whole video stops. So I needed something to make me sleep without the light radiating from the phone. So I discovered PTA, and then from that I moved to GWA, and I was a lurker there for quite some time. And the thing is, when I first found GWA, I wanted to write right away, but I got really scared because a lot of writers were like writing these wonderful scripts, and then I look at my script and I'm like, oh no, this is not good. So I procrastinated posting that script for a year, and then quarantine happened and a lot of stuff. So I just said, you know what, it's now or never, and then I just posted it. For me, writing on, I think it's just, like, there are wonderful ideas out there, and I want to write about it. But that's my story.
Nice. And yeah, I think we can all relate to that. Posting your first script, for me, and I think Megan mentioned this as well, is terrifying. It's so scary.
Oh, yeah. It is the scariest thing in the world.
Which is why, for a while, I was trying to fill people's first scripts as well. Back when I was doing a little bit more recording, when I had time. just because it was... Filling someone's first script is a very special experience. And it keeps them in the community, too, which is amazing. So... If you're ever looking for content, I encourage people to go out and fill people's first script, because they will love you forever.
Yep. I definitely remember my first script fill.
I like that ended with script fill. It's like, Belle, why did you join? Or what made you decide to start writing?
I pretty much decided to start writing right away as soon as I found out that there were scripts. Earlier this year, well, it's almost been a full year now. Anyway, earlier this year, I went looking for just recordings of men dirty talking. I thought, it's a big internet. It has to exist somewhere. And I don't remember the search terms that eventually led me to Reddit, but I found it. And I was very happy, and I did not leave my bed for a very long weekend. And...
yeah.
Love that.
That's beautiful. And, beautiful.
I realized pretty quickly, you know, these are not all improvs. Someone is writing these. Oh, it's not all the performers who are writing these. There are other people. You can just write a script and hopefully someone will voice it. And it's like, oh, well, I write things. I can do that. So I made a burner account and here I am.
Welcome. To all of you. Your writing is very valued by me, since I invite you on this podcast, and also by a lot of, I think, the people in the community.
So, I'm very glad you're here.
Sorry, I think a lot of men who need scripts, as Megan was talking about, it tends to be a little bit less explored than the F4 side. And there are differences. So what are, do you think, some of the differences between what's being written for women right now and what's being written for men? And obviously, there are no hard and fast rules. Different groups can have different content. But you do, there does seem to be a little difference in genre.
I mean, I can speak to basically the difference in how I write M4 and write F4, which is when I write M4 content, I try my best to think about not even necessarily what I would want to hear, but almost what if men in porn talked this way instead of the way I'm used to them talking? What if they, even if they are terrible, horrible rapist, murderer, stalker, whatevers, what if they didn't talk to me like I was a piece of meat? Wouldn't that be fun?
Such a novel idea.
And I am curious, are you saying compared to visual porn, or what's the comparison you're making?
Yeah, I'm comparing specifically to visual porn. And
got it.
I think, whereas on the F4 side of GWA, I think that there is a lot, since there's just a lot more content, it seems like there's a lot more people who are writing F4 scripts. And I could be wrong, but I think that there are more female performers consistently putting out work. There is already such a huge range of, like, emotional storytelling or non-emotional storytelling where, you know, people are just having sex. I think that with the F4 side of GWA, there's just a lot more options for performers when it comes to scripts. And so when I write, I try to write in a way that presents, I don't want to say like a brand new different idea, like I don't think I'm reinventing the wheel, but I do try to write things that are a little bit more, I don't know, nuanced than what I think is usually coming out of dudes' mouths in porn, visual porn specifically.
Really?
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I've never seen visual porn, as I think I mentioned in one of the early episodes. So, but it does not.
You're not missing much, Nat.
I don't. Reason why I've never seen it is because it's never appealed to me as much, just as a woman. I don't tend to be very visual. I suppose one of the arguments is that women are less visual, which I think is why audio porn is a very unexplored medium for a lot of women. They don't know it exists, but it's, when I discovered it, it was just the, like this almost like light bulb. Oh, moment because it was the first time that I thought that there was erotica that I could really relate to.
I think you could probably sum up almost all male visual porn lines with, you're going to take this big cock, and that's about the extent of it.
I mean, occasionally they'll dip their toe into some fun, degrading language, but it's never, it never comes from the heart, you know? Degrade me, but do it from a place of love. That's what I'm here to do.
Oh, that's classic.
And just think about it.
You're right. That is really, that's really interesting. Even in a degrading script, like, and I don't do a lot of those, but I'm not coming from a place of anger or really like negativity. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's something that I thought about a lot because I do a lot of introspection around my kinks because I can't not. I'm type A. I have to turn everything over. And when I first realized that, I might like to be called things that in another context I would never let anyone call me during sex, I wonder why that is. I kind of stopped and I thought about it and I realized that it's because in those situations, I know and they know that this isn't really what they think. And so it's coming from a place of trying to push a button inside of me to see what happens, but not to make me believe that I am actually, you know, terrible, dirty little slut. And so when I write, I try to write from the idea that even in what is not explicitly declared as a fantasy, it is a fantasy. And I try to weigh, you know, hitting the buttons of degradation and depersonalization and all that other jazz against, you know, still fulfilling a fantasy and kind of doing a, I don't want to say like a public service, but kind of doing the doing the like work of trying to keep it from tipping over into the territory of just hatred or dismissal.
I mean, it is, I think, really interesting, and I have noticed this more, although obviously I'm not like the GWA databank of scripts, despite what you might think. That's particularly on the F4 or men for women side of things. You get a lot more safety kinks that are explored. There's some where people use safe words, which is really interesting. You get stuff where they're talking through the dynamic prior to entering into it, which I know Megan, have written a little bit about, and I have as well, in terms of exploring kink, but also exploring the aspects of kink that porn tends to leave out, the part where you're checking in with people, the part where you're explaining it. And that seems to be something that you see, I think, a little bit more here, because it's just that part of intimacy, at least to me, and I think to a lot of women, is hot, in addition to the actual degradation.
Well, it is, I would say, too, Nat, that's part of actual, you know, kink play. Like, if you ever do real scenes and so on, the whole trust narrative is actually what's built, not the degradation piece, right, that people misunderstand. So what you're talking about is really part of what's done IRL. And you're right. I think you see it a lot more in the M4 scripts. And I haven't read as many of them, but you don't see a lot of it on the F side.
Yeah, and I don't have a guess as to why that is, but it is an interesting, I think, disparity. I mean, there's also, I think, the key element there of emotional vulnerability, which I think hits a lot of women's kinks, in terms of wanting to create the scene where there is men are being emotional and they're being vulnerable.
To do with the fact that women more frequently feel unsafe around sex than men do, perhaps. Like, with regard to sex, a lot of women's first consideration is going to be safety, perhaps in a way that's not always the case with men.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. A lot of the times, and I hadn't thought about my own writing this way, but I think that's a really good point, Belle, of what I'm trying to do when I'm trying to write or establish a character is not only make that character feel real, but make that character feel, I guess, fuckable. in a sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Safe to fuck. I fully understand what you mean. Like, you want to write a character that has emotions and is in touch with those emotions, because if he's in touch with those emotions, he is safe. He's human.
I mean, that's not...
No, go ahead, Belle.
I write rape porn, and I'm not doing that.
No, totally fair.
Yeah.
Totally fair.
So what are you trying to do, Belle?
Oh, God.
I'm sorry?
What are you trying to do, then? I'm just really curious about your process.
I write things that I think would be hot to hear men say. And other people so far have agreed with me. So I keep doing it. And things that I don't, that I have not necessarily found in other genres and other mediums.
Like what things?
Just men talking in general. Not just being, you know, kind of a grunting wall.
I don't regret my decision not to ever watch visual porn. So.
Yeah, you seldom hear men's voices where they've got like a 20-word vocabulary and they grunt occasionally.
Oh my God. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
It's like, I'm sure there are whole entire human beings with like an internal world, but none of that is communicated. And also just, I like stories, I like setup, I like to imagine that someone's, you know, a jewel thief getting fucked over a table. Why not? That's fun.
It is. I tend to be very, I think, as some of you know, plot heavy in my own works as well, where I just, I like plot.
Yeah.
I like setup.
Like a lot of the time, that's the most interesting part. For me, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that women tend to, the one place where you see a shift for women in erotica is with literature, which I've frankly been less into, but it does seem like women latch to stories more than you see, and I'm not saying there aren't great story pieces for women on DBA as well, but you see a lot more story-driven erotica for women generally than you do for men. But again, I haven't seen visual porn, so I don't know how like artful those are, but like I'm going to guess.
No, you're spot on that like written erotica is definitely more story.
Largely dominated by women.
Definitely more story driven and definitely dominated by women.
Yeah, you can see that on the commercial side. I mean, there isn't really
Chuck Tingle.
If you say romance novels, no one thinks of a man's romance novel.
Right.
I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm just saying that's not the predominant perception. I mean, you're exactly right.
But it's not always romance either, because a lot of what we write isn't really romance, but it's still narrative structure. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that someone on here is at least a little darker. We need that on this podcast.
Well, it's interesting because, to Belle's point.
Oh, no, I agree.
When I listen to content on GWA, I almost exclusively listen to things with the rape tag, even if it's not explicitly like violent rape, even if it's a coercion or a dubcon. I, in my listening patterns, lean towards that side of GWA. And yet, as a writer, I think I've written 20 scripts now. I have not written a single M for F script that is the kind of content that I would listen to. And it's something that I realized semi-recently, and I don't quite know what the disconnect is for me between writing scripts and listening to audios that revolve around rape.
That's interesting to me. Just, I'm glad I have an ally in this. I don't write to my own kinks very often. I want to tell a good story, and I tend to start from that perspective. And I write to kinks I understand, of course, and like. I would never write to a kink that I didn't understand, which is where my hard limits are. But it's not always erotica that I explicitly want to hear. It's more just like, I want to hear this very interesting story told. And it took me, I think, about... Well, I've written quite a few scripts at this point. I think it was about 75 scripts in before I really wrote anything that was remotely self-indulgent. It's not that was not intended to be a brag. We're going to whatever with that.
It's not a brag. I laugh because, yeah, I laugh because I know I know how you approach storytelling, and I think it's really similar to how I approach storytelling. But I think that I'm going to hit self-indulgent way before 75.
That's mostly why I think it's a number.
I think it's pretty likely.
So. I don't advise that as like a writing tactic. And you can guess at which ones those are. But yeah, it is. I mean, there's the intimacy involved with it, and then there's, I think, the embarrassment also. I still even now feel a little bit of just like, yeah, these are my kinks. You can know them. And putting that out there in the world, even for me now, is a little bit scary to do.
There's also the, and maybe this affects you guys, I'm not sure, but I have a thing where when I write a script and I throw it out into the world, I'm not usually thinking about what it's going to feel like to hear those words come out of someone else's mouth.
Oh yeah, we've talked about this before.
Yeah. And so there is a little bit of a there's a moment when I'm listening to script fills, because I listen to all my fills and I love each and every one of them. I always want more. It's really interesting to hear the differences between portrayals. Anyway, there's a moment when I listen to script fills where I will sometimes be like, oh my God, did I write that? That hit me in a weird place. And so I worry that part of my caution when it comes to being self-indulgent with my writing is that I am not sure I want to like sit and listen to 20 minutes of just things that I have specifically designed to assault me coming through my headphones.
Yeah, we did talk about that, how that's the, I guess, biggest compliment that I think a performer should feel is when they are so good that I'm just like, I could not have possibly written that. It's too good. Or you don't just realize, I guess, the emotions.
Yeah.
So, Belle's spoken to us more about writing in the darker area and how she just writes stuff she wants to hear, which is great. Galaxy, I know you have a different... You, I know, write a lot of more lighter PTA stuff, which is really great. Do you find your writing to be really self-indulgent, or is it stories you want to tell, or what gives you your motivation?
I think because I just started writing. I'm a fetus in this community. So I, with the exception of that one script that, yeah, that one. So for...
You can self-promote, dear. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I know, but that's correct.
This is very relatable. Don't worry.
I don't like talking about it because, yeah, it's very not me. Yeah. So for my PTA scripts, I just compare it to you guys when you want to hear a man say that stuff. I write for women, like what I want them to feel, not what a man would want to say, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it does. And it's very an unselfish writing, which you're a better person than all of us.
Yeah, that's why I do want to write F for M, but the thing is, I don't know what men want. I really don't. So I tend to gravitate around PTA because for personal experience, I want to be comforted. And surely there are a lot of women out there who would want to be comforted as well. But Yeah, there's that.
It's a valuable service. I got my start at PTA as well. So who knows, maybe the further you get into this, the more you'll write in other forms as well. Or not. We'll see.
We'll see.
Galaxy, I find that really interesting. Mm-hmm. Because you said that you write what you think women want to hear and not necessarily what you would want to hear someone say. I feel that same disconnect when I write F for M that you feel. And it hadn't occurred to me until this exact second that when I write F for M, I don't write what I think men will find hot. I just kind of write what I think is hot in the moment. And then when someone fills one of my F for M scripts, I kind of rely on the comments to see, like, oh, okay, men think this is good. Great. Fantastic. So I think that disconnect is pretty relatable.
Yeah, I feel a little bit the same way as well. When I'm thinking about my motivations for my F4 content, if it's not bi-related content, because I can relate to that pretty easy. If it's strictly for a male audience, what I'm typically, my focus for that is a lot more on the performer than it is the audience in those cases. And I'm like, what's going to make a fun script for the performer? What would they want to do? And that tends to be my focus a lot more than in the F4 cases, where it's like, well, this is what I think a female-centric audience would want to hear. It's, well, this is what I think a female-centric performer or somebody who identifies as female would want to perform. And that kind of tends to be my starting point for those. Or it's just, and because I think all of you do this a little bit as well. I also write gender neutral scripts. And those just tend to be, well, I think this is a fun personality or this is a fun character that works for everyone.
Yeah.
But those tend to be a little bit harder, I think, as well to do, just because it's hard not to mention body parts after a certain point.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I do know some writers who do it fantastically, though. So what do you think women find attractive in audio porn?
Yeah.
You all kind of hinted around this, but, and obviously we don't speak for all women. We are only four, not counting Priest, who I don't think identifies, but no stuff.
Never say never, baby. Never say never.
I knew if I let you, you would ramble on about this topic way more than they would. So you can hold your tongue back for a minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think that women find attractive in audio porn? What are the things that at least you find attractive, if nothing else? Specifically.
Hmm. Well, I know for me, there's an intimacy, and it's quite funny because I hate intimacy in general, but there is an intimacy there's an intimacy inherent in the second person nature of specifically the brand of audio porn that GWA is mostly populated by, where there's something so much more almost visceral about it. I also think that I am personally someone who consumes porn that is further to the, let's say, not feminist side of the spectrum. There's a lot of...
anything can be feminist. So
that's fair.
I don't know how to phrase it.
I consume porn that is a little.
I don't think what you get
it's
off to has anything to do with your politics.
And I don't necessarily like to watch women get the shit beat out of them by random dudes, but someone narrating beating the shit out of me doesn't pull up that same kind of wall in my mind.
I mean, there is, and it happens a lot in kink communities as well. And I think Priest was referring to it a little bit earlier. Part of what a power dynamic is recognizing the control that you have as a submissive, or even in a dominant audio where you're dominant over the listener or the performer, excuse me. As a listener, you as a listener have all the power in the scenario. You get the ultimate safe word insofar as you can just turn off the audio at any time.
Right.
And I think for a lot of women, that can be an interesting experience. It's just this play of, I guess, giving yourself over to the roughness, but knowing that it's with your choice. Sorry if I'm putting too much words in your mouth, Megan.
No. I think that's almost exactly it. I think that there is something. And I also, I feel like GWA is a really good place to kind of explore different kinks that you might be interested or might not be interested in, simply because if at any point a weird button gets pressed in the back of your mind, you can turn it off. And you can, if you're me, you can sit and do a therapy exercise about why exactly that button in your mind was pushed, or you can turn it off and just let it go and move on. Like a normal human being would.
Megan, you need to write a script that is just you doing that therapy exercise, because I really want to see what it is. Oh,
I absolutely will. 1,000%.
Yeah, it's going to be Megan's triggers.
No, but it's interesting because, like, I would say the most recent kind of kink that I have acquired is around DDLG content. And in real life, the amount of work I would have to do before I let a man refer to himself as daddy in front of me would be astronomical.
Fair.
And in this context, I can just kind of turn on an audio and see how I feel about it. And so I do think that there is a playfulness that when combined with the more intimate nature makes it really appealing, at least to me.
Right. And you know what's interesting, kind of to your point, you only put yourself into the fantasy as far as your own fantasy mind wants to, right? I mean, so to your point, it's completely safe. You can explore it. You're only into that kink as far as you let yourself feel into that kink. And if any point it feels uncomfortable, you pull back or turn it off, right? So it's safe exploration of things that are normally really taboo.
Particularly for women, it's hard to get to that level in real life, as I think Megan was saying, just because it's hard to trust men and it's hard to find men to trust. And the process of trusting men takes months because you guys suck. not really, but you know. I like men. It's fine.
Trust development for kink play, that's a big deal. Like even in the open play communities and stuff, that is not something you go and do quickly.
You're not the only one with experience.
That is a very long thing. No, I get it. I'm just saying that you're exactly right, though. You don't, you know, yeah, you can hook up and have sex with somebody, right? But to have trust to do plays and power X and all that, that takes months or years or longer.
A part of my general issue is that I'm really busy. I have a lot going on, and
I feel
the amount of time and work it takes to, I think, build that kind of trusting relationship is something that, though I am interested in it, I know myself, and I know that I'm very likely to backburner that in favor of doing the million other things on my to-do list. And so it's kind of nice to have an avenue to dip my toe into those waters without having to do the months and months and months of getting to know someone and building a full, unbreakable trust before I let them so much as look at me the wrong way.
I think it's true, but you know, really it starts to model what that might be like IRL in some ways, right? I mean, that is translatable to a degree.
I think that the exploration aspect of it and the comfortability, is that a word? Yeah. The comfortability of like dipping into something and then pulling back is something that could be applicable. But I do also, and I don't know if this is a worry anyone else has, I do kind of worry that listening to audios on GWA is gonna like accidentally brainwash me into like post-quarantine going into my first sexual encounter and being like, yeah, so I want you to beat the shit out of me. No big deal. Just, you know, really hit me. And then being like, I'm sorry, what's happening here? So I worry about, in my own mind, trying to one-to-one kind of the experience here and then taking it out into the real world.
Well, I mean,
yeah, and poor Galax is going to be like, where's my aftercare? Where's my aftercare?
I mean, you have to, I think, keep in mind that, like, obviously audio and real life are not the same thing. So there are definitely some kinks I like in audio porn that I don't like or probably would not like as much in real life. Also, like, frankly, people don't come at the same time as much in real life. So audio porn. I just have to live with that one. But it's okay. But I think that definitely is part of what this is this just ability that's really explorative. And I see this on both sides, just being able to explore all these different types of kinks in new ways. And I think aspect of it that's really interesting for me, and I'd be interested to hear Galaxy's thoughts on this a little bit more as well, is we've heard a little bit about the rougher side of this and being able to explore new kinks. What's appealing about it from the softer side? What do you think women gain after this more, I guess, softer or romantic experience, which I also really like?
I think it's mostly for vulnerability, because I may be biased, but the men who I've been with are afraid of being vulnerable, and they shouldn't be, because in general, society has created this idea that for a man you have to be this, 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 and this. So it's like, when I create scripts for softer side, it's more of, I am allowing you to be vulnerable. It is fine to be vulnerable. It is okay. You're allowed to be soft, not just be this big man who, not controlled, but like, who knows what he wants, but is like, who can bring down his walls type of thing.
You're a very good person. So.
I'm a baby, so.
Aw.
I mean. She's not wrong, though. I mean, there's more than a few books about the topic of the lack of men being able to express their feelings in a proper and appropriate way. And a lot of it has to do with the inability to be vulnerable. It's a very real cultural issue she's identified. I mean, I definitely agree.
And I wish that was why I wrote a lot of my softer stuff. But admittedly, a part of it's just like, I like making people say the things that I want them to say. I get some high off that.
We're all just puppets in your hand, Natalie. Puppets.
But yeah, I do agree that there's just this, and I think it relates a lot to what both Meg, you and Galaxy were saying. There's a lot you have to work up to in real life with sex and partners. And part of that is trying to get someone to trust them enough to beat the shit out of you. But part of also that is, as Galaxy was saying, trying to get this emotional intimacy and trying to get to that place with somebody, especially a man who's been trained out of it, is hard. And it's a lot of work. And it's a lot of time investment, and sometimes you just want somebody to say those things to you and have it feel genuine without having to do all that work or that build up to get there. And audio, I think, is a great way to explore that. Bella, I don't know if you had anything to add on the... what do you think women find attractive in audio porn?
For women who are attracted to men, well, like Galaxy and Priest were saying, men aren't really encouraged to be communicative, open, vulnerable. It's hot to hear them making noise, enjoying themselves, telling you explicitly what they're thinking. And for women who are listening to other genders, I'm sure it's still hot to hear these things, even if it's less of a rarity. Plus, audio porn has an element of storytelling, or can have an element of storytelling, that is generally not present in visual porn, as we've mentioned.
Why do women like stories? If anyone has an answer to that question, because it's been bothering me for a very long time. And if you don't, that's fine.
And do we know that men don't?
I don't think that they don't, but just more men's porn tends to be focused on the visual. I think we see more storytelling here, which is great. But I don't know why women's entry point a lot of the time tends to be stories.
Dare I venture a guess?
You may speak.
So, fundamentally, I think men approach porn, and one reason the visual part appeals to them, it's really more the physical, like raw sexual act. But for women, generally speaking, I think for many of them, sex is a much more emotional experience. And so that words connect to that emotional experience, then connect to sex. But for men, they often get to the physical activity of sex, which then leads to emotional connection. Like, we literally approach sex as the connectivity from opposite sides of the spectrum, if
that's
you will.
Really,
I mean, how much of that is natural and how much of that is society?
I don't know, but it's a very real dynamic when you read about it, or, you know, couples discussions or therapy, like around sexuality. It's a very real issue how men and women approach the connection and sexuality dynamic is kind of opposite.
And we should say this, of course, doesn't apply to every man or every woman. And it can be, I think, very socially constructed, as Belle was saying. But there are...
Sure, I don't disagree.
Yeah, I do think you can sometimes talk about slight differences in how sexuality is interpreted, even if they, of course, aren't hard and fast differences, and don't apply to everyone. And if they're mostly socially constructed, because unfortunately we live in a world where men aren't taught to be emotionally vulnerable, and they're also taught that they can't touch people. Just gotta suck.
Yeah.
So again, because I'm me, this is something that I have spent a lot of time thinking about, simply because I have a lot of guy friends, and I'm one of those people who will make myself an open space for any and all questions that my guy friends have. And one of the things that's come up multiple times in my life, in conversations, is that when my guy friends fantasize about a woman, like when they meet someone or they start to think, oh, I might like this person, their fantasies are almost all sexual. And I'm not sure how this applies for you guys, but I and a lot of the women I've talked to, when they fantasize about men, they fantasize in a very almost domestic way. Like, we have sexual fantasies. I have quite a few sexual fantasies. But I also just kind of like the idea of, like, sitting on the couch with someone. Like, I will imagine myself cuddling with a guy that I have a crush on. And I feel like it's... because for me, at least, sex is probably the most vulnerable I ever am. And I've spoken to women who feel that way, but I haven't heard it in the same intensity level, I guess, from guys, that when they decide to have sex with someone, or when they are having sex with someone, like, that moment is a moment in which they kind of, I don't know, give themselves up to whatever is about to happen. And I think for women, the way that we get there matters more to us. And it is probably societal, and it also might have something to do with, you know, the emotions and the way we kind of, the chemicals our brain releases when we have sex, blah, 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 blah. But I do think that there is something in women who are attracted to men that really drives us to want the full layered connection in addition to the actual sexual act. Does that make sense?
It does.
I feel like I would just chalk that up to, again, women are, or a possible explanation maybe, is that women are always risking more for potentially less pleasure.
That's true.
Very true. Like every time you go home with a man, he might kill you or get you pregnant. And the odds of him getting you off, you know, aren't necessarily very high.
For that, but yeah.
Whereas when a man goes home with a woman, he's probably going to get off and probably be fine in the morning.
Like, yeah, there's less, I think, innate fear because you're just conditioned from such a young age of just, I need to be aware of my safety at all times. And men, by and large, aren't taught that as much because they don't need to be.
Yeah.
And it leads to this kind of just need for more to be there.
So, like, if women do need more connection and it's not purely manufactured by society, it might be because if you don't know this guy, he might be a murderer. Or the father of your child.
Right.
Yeah. Both of which are big investments.
You're very right. All the bioevolutionary data suggests you're exactly right. And that there's very real evolutionary reasons for those feelings and emotions that are deeply programmed within us.
We're not stating a theory of either social or biological evolution here. We're just, none of us, for the most part, are scientists who work on this. So. And the judgments are not reflected in those podcasts. This is just us kind of thinking about the different ways that these things could be or why they might be. So yeah, I think that gets at a lot of very interesting points that because men and women sometimes come at this from different perspectives, as Priest was saying and as Belle was suggesting, men tend to have a little bit of misconceptions about women's sexuality. What do you think some of those are, and how do you think that they audio porn helps either change them or indulge in them?
I think we could go on about misconceptions for an entire series of podcasts. But the one I'm going to go with...
It could be its own podcast topic.
The one I'm going to go with is that there's any one answer to anything. I feel like I see a lot of guys come in and say, do women like X? And the answer is yes and no and sometimes. And I don't know, I'm willing to be convinced. And I'm indifferent because there's 3.5 billion of us. There is no answer. So that's the misconception.
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well.
I think that the big misconception that I feel like I encounter is that, I mean, if you throw out the women don't want sex as much as men, which I will throw out because it's obviously bullshit. I think that the big misconception I encounter is that men assume women want certain things because we think it's what they want. I've talked to a lot of guys who genuinely in their heart of hearts believe that women don't actually want to be degraded or choked or slapped or spit on or whatever. We just assume that that's what they want to do, and so we tell them that it's what we want to do. And it's not true. I am fairly confident in saying that I don't have a single kink that is something I do because I think men
like. Oh, God, no.
I like what I like because it's what makes me happy. It's the way I was wired. And I think that in audio porn, there is a kind of an assumed place of you've clicked on this because you like it. There is absolutely no reason for you to click on an audio to listen to something because you think a dude would like you listening to it. Like, that whole part of it is completely removed. And so we don't have to play the, oh, do you really like this? Do you not like this game at all? we can just kind of dive in to getting the content that we actually like.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's nice to, I guess, and it relates, I think, back to trust of just, yeah. And that, I think, is another, I guess, big, I guess, tip, advice to any men who are listening to this. If women say something, listen to what they say. Don't assume they mean something different, for the most part.
As the great Maya Angelou once said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them.
I love that we have a Maya Angelou reference now in the podcast. Galaxy, what about you? Do you have anything that you think that people tend to have misconceptions about in terms of your sexuality? That's fair. I mean, I will add this piece of advice, which I think is pretty simple for anyone who wants maybe a tip. And again, I think Belle pointed out it doesn't apply to all women. But when she says keep going, she means exactly that pace. Don't speed up.
Oh, God. Wait, that's an excellent tip.
I just want to chime in and say she's exactly right, guys.
I've been there a few times. Just trust me. I realize it's hard to curb the impulse, but it's there.
Also, when a woman tells you, oh, hey, I think you can hit a little bit harder, or I should probably note at this point, I'm a little bit of a brat, so I tend to needle people and pull things out of them. But if a woman says, hit me harder, hit her harder. She knows what she's asking for. She's a big girl. You know, put some weight into it.
So let's jump back to writing for a second, since that's technically what this is supposed to be about. That other thing. So I think we're talking a little bit about this with Megan in terms of some of your work, in terms of how you play, I guess, for and against type, because you write, obviously, these scenes that delve into erotic tropes, but how do you use those tropes to kind of satisfy your own kinks and to satisfy other people's kinks? And to what extent are you trying to be unique? Ooh. And to what extent are you just trying to get off? Which is a valid, valid thing.
More than valid. I was a book kid. I was one of those kids who always had a book with them. I was always reading. I was always
a simp you so hard.
Yeah. I was lost in books, and I remember a habit I used to pick or a habit I picked up that I used to do a lot. I do it less now because I'm more selective about what I read, is that I used to in my head imagine lines for characters that I thought would be more interesting than the lines that they said.
So you were like rewriting Pride and Prejudice as a child.
Oh, not Pride and Prejudice. More like Chronicles of Narnia or Series of Unfortunate Events. I was like, okay, so I get it. Their parents are dead. They're really sad. But wouldn't it have been more interesting if at a certain point they kind of implied that the oldest daughter killed the parents? Like, I get it. There's the bad guy. But wouldn't it have just been cooler if she decided that she wanted to take over the family fortune and the parents were wasting their time, so she killed them? That's not how those books ended. But I am the type of person who, when I encounter tropes in writing and reading and basically anything, my brain automatically goes to, what's the weirdest thing that could happen within this trope and still make sense, but build a story. And I don't always do it because it's porn and it's scripts, and I try to not get as lost in story as I usually do, and I sometimes succeed.
But... I would just tell you to fuck it, given some of the stuff I've written, like, go for it.
Well, it's really funny because, Nat, your one-to-one plot to sex rule is something I think about a lot when I write, because I think my first script is like 70% plot, and there's some sex thrown in around the plot or as part of the plot, but I was really just trying to advance a story, and I really like the idea of, like, taking an assumed trope and just twisting it a little bit to see how interesting you can get.
Yeah, that's, I think, a lot of fun. Can you give an example from your own work that we're trying to promote?
Off the top of my head. So I have a script that I really love, and it's super ridiculous. But I have a script where I basically imagined, what if the fantasy suites portion of the Bachelor competition, what if in a fantasy suite situation, the Bachelor revealed that he actually wasn't just looking for a wife, but he was also looking for a submissive. And he was kind of curious as to whether you, the listener, would be interested in trying some of that. And it was a really fun script to write, simply because I love The Bachelor. It is not good TV, but it is great TV. I am in a Bachelor Fantasy League. It is a great time. And the... Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a thing? Wow.
There are Bachelor and Bachelorette Fantasy Leagues. You can bet on it in Vegas. It's a whole thing. Oh, yeah. It's huge. And I feel like The Bachelor is kind of sold to us as the classic love story with a dash of competition. Like, you meet this guy, you travel, he keeps choosing you over all these women, and then at the end, in front of the whole world, he gets down on one knee and proposes to you, and it's a whirlwind romance. And those relationships never work. I think there is one lasting relationship from them in like 23 seasons. And I assume the reason they never work is because the Bachelor and his chosen woman don't actually have time to sort out the nitty-gritty of their day-to-day lives, what their routines are, their politics, their media consumption, or sex. And I really liked the idea that in this one overnight date, this one night where after 8 weeks, you've gone on group dates and you've gotten dinner together, but you don't really know each other, and you have this one opportunity where the cameras are all turned off. What if in that moment, someone was completely honest about what they needed from a sexual partner and they tried to see if it worked out?
Yeah, and that's a great way to talk about romance and kink. And I think a really fun way is... with erotica, you can't go too cheesy. It's pretty hard to make the lines too cheesy. So you can just indulge or just go full hog in it and just indulge in this overtop romanticism occasionally. Because sometimes you need that. As emphasized by the, I guess, number of performers I've made call the listener darling. Because I love the word darling so much. But Meg has backed me up on that on multiple occasions. So.
Darling is good, and it is... the kind of content we need. I will always back you up on darling.
Thank you, darling. Well, what tropes do you like or like to write for or against, and how do you do it?
I kind of want to agree with what you said about an erotica can't be too cheesy. It's the same with dark stuff. You don't have to be realistic. You can just say whatever deranged horse shit comes into your mind. It doesn't have to be realistic.
That's true.
But yeah,
It's very freeing.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say a trope that I like is of like a strong person being brought really low. I like to write and I like to listen to victims who never expected this sort of thing to happen to someone like them. You know, someone who is dangerous or impressive or something in their own right, just being utterly broken down. I like
for
that.
The listener, for the performer. I enjoyed that.
Well, it's generally the performer doing the breaking to the listener.
Nice. I mean, there is, I think, the just loss of control, which is what an orgasm is, that you sometimes like to mimic in other parts of writing, of just giving yourself over, whether that's dark or light, which I find really attractive. So definitely down for that. Okay, so I promised Priest we'd also get to this point because he liked how I wrote it. So men are really fucking weird. They are. They're odd. They're incredibly odd. And one of the, I think, struggles when I've talked to men writing for women, because men writing for women is very much a thing and they struggle with how to do it correctly. Which, and I know from the female performer side, they sometimes have this disconnect of just, well, I wouldn't say that. But I think on our side, there's also this problem of how do you capture what it is to be a man in a way that's both fantasy, but also kind of realistic to what men would actually say? I mean, obviously men are not all that different from women, but there's still this need to like bring in some, I think, elements of masculinity into a scene sometimes, or make it feel like the gender dynamic is working in some way. How do you do that? How do you make your fantasy men characters sound realistic?
I put zero effort into that.
I love that.
I just write what I think. Well, for the most part, a lot of my narrators just sound like me, just at varying degrees of angry and sweary and tired.
So you're really just an angry, sweary man inside.
No, what I'm trying to say is I don't think men sound all that different.
I mean,
because I put zero effort into that, but I have gotten plenty of messages that say, like, oh my God, this is me.
I mean, I definitely.
It's like, cool.
I get it.
That's totally incidental, but like, I'm glad.
I mean, I definitely agree, and I tend to be a very big script flipper insofar as I think most scripts that don't mention body parts can be flipped. But there is this, I think, trying to think of how to word this. I, as a person who's attracted to both genders, I do feel an attraction to men that comes from their masculinity specifically. And I sometimes try to put that aspect into my scripts, but trying to do it in a realistic manner is something that's very tricky for me to do. I don't know if that makes any sort of sense to people.
No, that makes perfect sense to me. And when you first read this question, or more accurately, when you sent me these questions ahead of time and I pre-read them because I did interview prep for this podcast.
Which is also hot.
I kind of thought I didn't have an answer, simply because when I write, I don't try to think, oh, would a man say this? Would a man not say it? And I've only in my time here come across one instance of someone writing something for a straight man to say that I didn't think that he would say. And I've talked about it before. I talked about it with the...
Was this the Men Don't Yearn thing?
Yes, this is Men Don't Yearn.
What?
My very good friend, Margot Moon, wrote a script. And one of the lines in the script was basically something along the lines of, oh, are you saying that all this time you weren't just keeping your distance from me because you didn't want to see me? It's because you were yearning for me. I was yearning for you. And I was like, Margot, straight men don't yearn. I'm so sorry.
I don't agree. I'm sorry. Maybe I just know more artistic
Honestly, maybe.
Maybe more emo men fall in love with me because that sounds like a guy to me.
You have to write that, I think, a little bit more emo for that to work, or a very just over-the-top romantic era.
Yeah, it was, it's not so much that men don't yearn, it's that I didn't think that that specific character would yearn in that way. But I will say that I, kind of like how Belle said that most of her narrators are basically her, I think that...
Well, they sound like me. I don't murder that many people.
Fair enough.
I'm trying to
We still haven't talked about that one person, but, you know, we'll do that after the podcast.
I realized that I, when I write M4 content, I kind of write to the archetype of the, so far, I would say, lovable goofball who kind of undercuts the serious woman. Simply because in my day-to-day life, I am very put together and I'm very controlled. And I think I need lightness and levity. So I write men who, when they encounter strong women, don't just kind of go, okay, that's cool, that's who you are. They try their best to lighten them up and get them to take themselves less seriously. I don't think that that dynamic will maintain through my more self-indulgent rapey scripts that are eventually coming. But I do think it's something that is interesting, and I hadn't thought about it before.
I mean, you could, I think, flip that for a rape script in the future, of just having somebody who had that, like, charismatic, like, flippantness that you bring to a lot of your scripts, but in a way that's more taunting than it is teasing.
Hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah. I don't. We can talk about that more maybe off during the podcast.
Yeah, we don't have to. We don't have to do beta reading or pre-collab work on the podcast. We can do that ourselves.
Galaxy, do you have anything to add? How do you like to write men, or how do you go about that to make them sound manly or not manly? No worries, we can just edit this out. Okay. So let's move on then to general writing tips as well. We talked a little bit this in our last writing pod-centric podcast, but I think it's great to get a different perspective on this as well. What tips or advice do you have for people who want to get into erotic writing? Other than write stuff, which is, I think, the primary advice.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something more interesting than just write. Well, okay. I can share something that I currently struggle with and have started to kind of work on, which is, don't try to make your writing perfect. It's never going to be perfect. You're never going to get any idea across in the exact way you want to, and that's okay. You can just write what comes naturally, and if you're me, you can write it and then go to bed and then wake up the next morning and read it with fresh eyes to edit, or you can just write and once it feels good, put it out into the world. Don't try to hold yourself to the standard of, because I think a lot of people, especially new writers, have this feeling that, oh, there are so many script writers and they're so good, and I don't know if I should write because whatever I write, someone else could probably do better. And A, it's bullshit, but B, you don't have to be what you think a scriptwriter is. You don't have to write the way you think a scriptwriter is supposed to. You just write what you want to write and put it out into the world. And there will always be someone who finds what you do and thinks to themselves, oh, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. And that moment is completely worth it. And it's never undercut by, oh, but this one phrase is a little weird, ever.
And a lot of times they correct that for you, which is great.
They sure will.
Yeah, finding that perfect, I think, just match for your script and the voice, which, again, it doesn't matter the accent, it doesn't matter anything else, just they're passionate about it, and finding that, like, just fit, oh, they like your work, is just amazing.
So. Yeah.
Belle, what advice would you have for new writers?
I think that was a good point about how that one little phrase isn't going to ruin it for them. Like, if you think back on all your own favorite books and scripts and stuff, I doubt you've ever gotten to one sentence and been like, ugh, those adverbs. I can never look you in the eye again. But I think my advice is just do it. Just start. Keep going. You get better at things by doing them. Try not to read a whole bunch of advice and psych yourself out. Open up a document and write whatever makes the words come. Write what I would also say to write what makes you happy, what delights you, not what you think the audience wants. Mm-hmm. I feel like I see a lot of, but what do people want? It's like, ah, you're going to kill yourself chasing that, and you're not going to make anything that you enjoy. So write what makes you happy. The audience is large. Somebody else is going to like it too.
Yeah. It's one of the fun things about this is it can be any type of content.
Mm-hmm.
Galaxy, are you able to add anything?
I didn't get any of what Belle said because my internet is messy. But
she just dropped off and back on, so I don't know.
Don't over edit because there will be many times where you would look at a script and you're like, no, but this would be better. But this, you're unsure. So you feel like you have to change it, but usually the first try, at least for me, is the best one. And for formatting as well, like if you look at another writer's, how they format it, you would feel like very, not insecure, but you feel not. If you try to copy someone else's format, it's not you. So just write as you are. Over edit. That's my two cents in this.
Yeah, I think that's very big advice. And I think it's important to mind as well that this is a hobby. So it doesn't have to be, as I think people were saying, perfect or over the top or anything. It can just be for fun. I would, and I think I pointed this out last time as well, look at how a script is formatted if you want to do GWA, just as a heads up. Because it's easier if scripts are broken up into paragraphs as well. Just as a tip.
Also, don't stress too much about the titles and tags.
Mm-hmm.
I get really lost in playing the titles and tags game because I feel like, well, if I can just communicate everything that's going to happen in the script through the titles and tags, then nobody who might be interested in it will miss it. But at the end of the day, the titles and tags do not matter nearly as much as the content. So I am of the mind that pick a title that makes you happy. And make sure that you have all of your necessary tags and any tags that you think might, because a lot of performers will just copy the tags straight when they do their script fill. So I like to make sure that all of my tags let a listener know what they're going to be getting if they click on the audio. But
don't try to play the game of, oh, well, what kind of titles are people really interested in, or what tags are really popular right now. If you try to chase things like that, you will drive yourself insane. Just write what you want to write.
Yeah. And as I think we were talking a little bit about last time, all different types of title strategies tend to work. I say, as somebody who writes really freaking pedantic titles for some of their stuff.
Well, and sometimes depending on how it's performed, you know, you have to modify the tags, or even, you know, I pulled things off or added them. So the VA can often adjust the tags a bit if necessary.
Obviously keep the mandatory tags though.
Sure.
Yes. Do, but. Super important.
Sure. But I'm saying outside of those, the descriptive tags is more what you're talking about. And those can be adjusted if you need.
Yeah. And they're fun to play with. Final, I think, question before we say goodbye to our lovely guests for this evening is, so we've talked a little bit about writing, but there's also, of course, performing these scripts. What advice would you have to performers on how to perform a script? What are some tips that you think help them work or get less nervous or anything else? Do you think?
Ooh. I think my big tip would be to find a script that really turns you on. Like, don't just pick a script because you think it's interesting or it's well written. Find a script that you want to perform, not just from a performance standpoint, but also from a sex standpoint. I think that there are performers who don't like to fill scripts that other performers have filled. They kind of feel like, well, if these people have done it, they've, you know, set this standard that I can't reach, so I'm just not going to touch it. Don't do that. If you find a script that you love, perform it. It doesn't matter if it has no fills or if it has 10 fills. And I say this as someone who was like bullied performers who have told me that they want to perform my scripts, but someone else always gets to them first. I'm like, no. You perform it, because every script fill is, and this is not like a line, every script fill is genuinely different and interesting. And I personally love hearing how different performers have completely different takes on the exact same words or scenario. So I guess my advice would be, find something that's hot to you and fill it no matter what has happened before or what might happen after.
Every artist just definitely brings, I think, a different take. That's definitely right. Belle, do you have any advice you think for performers?
I think that's good advice. That's something that you're sincere about. Your sincerity will help come through. Slow down.
Oh, yeah.
Slow down. You're probably going a lot faster than you think you are. I've also seen the advice that you should overact a little bit, because a lot of the things that would be conveyed through your face and your body language are obviously not being conveyed. So in order to make the same impact, overact a little bit in your voice so you don't sound monotone. Yeah, that's all I got.
Nice. Galaxy?
I think you just, for my scripts specifically, there's a lot of improv. So, and improv, when you do it, there's no specific time. And I just put certain phrases into it. I think what most performers do, well, specifically for my scripts, is that they just read off what I gave them. And that you are not confined into that certain note that I've given you. Improvs can go as long as you want, given this script premise. And also, when you see a script or a line in a script, do not be afraid of changing it if you don't feel comfortable on a certain line. Because I think what some performers do is that they say it even though they're not comfortable with it. And if you're filling a script that's on you, and I don't mean that in like an offensive way, it's you're performing it, so you do you.
Yeah, I think that's great advice as well. And I will say, even if somebody who like micromanages their scripts and tells you exactly what to say up till the point of orgasm, improv is fine. Like, go for it. Add things. It adds amazing elements to the script. Okay. For real, last question, because I did this last time and I'm going to feel guilty if I didn't give writers a chance to do it this time. What's a script that you're particularly proud of and want to promote? Like, what's some project that you're really proud of and happy that you did? Megan, we're starting with you.
Great. Love that. Oh, yeah, I have one. So something I haven't really talked about here is that, hello, nice to meet you. I am a Black woman. And I kind of noticed around GWA when I was lurking that there weren't a lot of performers of color, and there wasn't a lot of content for performers of color. And I didn't necessarily feel like, oh, well, there should be specific, you know, scripts for Black performers and interracial performers and white performers, simply because I think that the medium doesn't necessitate that. I think that anyone can fill pretty much any script. But I did, or I should say, I do try to write in a way that I hope is inclusive for everyone. And I had a performer reach out to me and ask if I would create some content specifically for Black performers to create audios around. And so I wrote a script. It's about, I wrote two versions, a M4 and an F4, and it's about teaching your partner how to play spades before you guys go meet your parents for the first time. And it's a lot nicer than what I usually write. It's very sweet. It's very fluffy. But I am really, really proud of kind of a script that is slice of life, but a slice of life that, though I live it, and I know that there are other performers who live it, isn't necessarily the slice of life kind of stuff that we see around GWA. So Spades Lesson would be my big, proud script.
Nice. Galaxy, what about you? What script are you particularly proud of?
I have two, actually.
Okay, go for it.
They're my most recent ones. It's the Orpheus and Eurydice and Heather. And what's the similarity for both of them is that they are very intense emotionally. And again, going back to my point from like very previous on, is that you are allowed to be vulnerable and very intimate with someone that you are, that you trust, because that should be a given. There's also the emotional aspect of it that I didn't realize that I was able to do for both of them, because it, for both of them, it allows the performer to actively respond to whatever it is that is written, and you just let your emotions flow. And I think that is very beautiful, and I am really sorry if I made you cry. But
I take pride in that. If I can hurt you, that as a writer. So, and those scripts are excellent. So thank you for sharing them with us.
Thank you.
Belle, what about you?
I'm looking at my archive. And I love all of my children equally. That's a lie.
Yeah, right.
That could be your answer if that's what the answer you want it to be.
I have a script called Hurricane Season. And it's about a man who comes to a small town, and what happens is the same thing that happens in all of my scripts. But it's written in a different style that's much closer to my normal narrative style. It's much closer to my regular writing. And I don't know, I like it. I think it turned out well and differently than my usual sort of thing. Yeah, I'm going to go with that
Belle.
One.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Belle.
This is the script
from your
tag challenge, right?
Tag challenge, right?
That's Fresh Meat.
Oh, not that one.
I like that one, too. Oh, not that one.
Okay.
No, Hurricane Season's more like a story than a script, honestly.
I'll have to add that to my reading
list. Awesome.
So much wonderful content
out there.
Now it's time. Since we've been going for an hour and a half, good job, everyone, for final thoughts, which is typically how we close this podcast. Just anything you want to leave our listeners with, whether it's writing advice, life advice, anything else. So we'll start this time with Galaxy. Any final thoughts that you have?
I've been in a couple of servers, and some people are usually afraid of starting their quote-unquote audio career because they feel like their voice is not good enough. And I am telling you right now, your voice is very much unique. And if you don't like it, I guarantee you someone out there will love it. So just deep breath and then dive into it.
Nice. Belle, final thoughts.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. I look forward to listening to it when it gets edited and put out there. I don't think I have any final advice or sage wisdom to pass out. You can move on to Megan.
That's sage wisdom in itself.
There we go. Say thank you. Wash your hands. Wear your mask. Stay inside. Listen to porn. Stay inside and jerk off.
Nice.
Megan, how about you?
I think my big piece of advice would be to, if you find someone who's writing you like, and you have something you're not sure about, or are just interested in learning more, I think reach out to us. I think people sometimes forget that performers and writers are real people, but we are real. We exist. And most of us are pretty friendly. And I think one of the great things about GWA is the community aspect. And I think that making connections is a really, really fun aspect of this hobby. So I would just leave people with the advice of say hi, reach out. We don't usually bite.
Except Belle, who's murdered
asterisk,
people.
But asterisk, asterisk.
And my very friendly co-compatriot Priest, do you have any final advice?
Yeah, thanks. Mostly I wanted to tell Natalie, the award-winning Natalie, by the way.
Oh, shut up.
Thank you.
I love it.
I know, right? So just thank you so much for taking the time and getting these folks together and putting them out there. And because the four of you actually write scripts, I just want to give a very personal expression of thank you for writing scripts for me and other male VAs to perform. Without you guys and your effort and what you do regularly, and y'all have different reasons and different passions you pursue, but without this wonderful variety, I wouldn't have the chance and other VAs wouldn't have the chance to voice these scripts and to express themselves and to have such a wonderful, fun time doing it. So I wanted to say primarily thanks to those of you who are putting the effort in and doing it. I personally appreciate it. And on behalf of all the male VAs out there, thank you as well, right? And then secondly, I want to say to any of the potential writers out there, those of you that lurkers, I love to do scripts that are fulfilling your fantasies, right? So it doesn't matter, kind of like some of them were saying earlier, I think Megan, you mentioned it specifically, and obviously Belle has her own proclivities, right? That it doesn't have to be, what do people want? That is not the point of any of this. If you have some passion, some sexy, kinky, whatever that you want filled, write it out as best you can. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be word for word. It's okay if it says improv a little bit here and there, right? For some of us, but put it out there. There are literally more male performers than scripts. Every month, there are dozens or more scripts written for women that go unperformed. But on the male side, if you look at like unfilled scripts, it's near zero. We literally need more women writing M4F content for the existing male VAs. So I would just really encourage anybody who's interested, please, you know, there's stuff out there. Or, you know, like you said, if you have a writer you like, ask if they have something unfilled. They love it when you do it. So mostly thank you to all of you. And thanks to Natalie for hosting today.
And thank you for keeping quiet. So we'll leave us with, I guess, this final advice. We've been talking a lot about vulnerability today, vulnerability in writing, vulnerability in performing, vulnerability in sex. And I guess I'll just say this. Sometimes it's just really worth it to be vulnerable, whether that's with writing and taking a plunge into that, or whether that's performing for the first time, or whether that's actually being vulnerable with a person in real life. Gasp, I know.
Ugh. So, let's not get crazy.
Quiet. So don't, as scary as it can be and as terrifying as it can be, there's a great and amazing powerfulness and vulnerability that when it hits the right moment can be absolutely magical. So I encourage anyone who's listening to this to go seek that out in any form you can find it. And I wish you guys all a very happy listen and a very wonderful weekend or whenever this airs. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.